This is Conquering Columbus.
Hey guys, it's Andy here, filling in for Mike, and you're listening to the Conquering Columbus podcast. On this episode of the show, Mike is talking with Carla Epler, COO of Schmitz Sausage House. Schmitz has been around since 1886 in Columbus, and early on in the show, Mike asked Carla how the restaurant has managed to stay relevant for so long. Here's what she had to say.
You have to stay relevant. We've kind of evolved since 1886. We started as a meatpacking house, and then we kind of went from that into a restaurant. Then we had the catering and banquets. We've always had fairs and festivals, at least since 1914 with the Ohio State Fair. That was our first year there. And it was to market the meat products. So we've always been involved with that. Then came e-commerce. In 2008, Adam Richman came and filmed Man vs. Food in the restaurant. And that was in September he filmed that. And we launched our e-commerce business in December of 2008. So we've been doing that for 15 years. We launched food trucks 11 years ago. So we keep our core values, who we are, the products, the recipes, the people, the culture, but we stay relevant.
Later, Carla spoke about how the restaurant is starting to consider expanding and what the dynamics of working with multiple family members in a family-owned business is like.
We're looking to go to cities where we have seen success, or we have, with our mail order, we look at zip codes and who orders the most from us. So that's going to be one of the ways that we help determine where should the next franchise be. And then, of course, logistics fall into that. So yeah, we have one that is like, well, you know, it's good. Let's not rock the boat. We're good. Let's just stay status quo. But we all know that you can't stay status quo, because then you will become irrelevant and you won't continue to grow that way.
They wrapped up the show talking about the Columbus Oktoberfest coming up September 8th through the 10th.
Our Oktoberfest definitely gives off that vibe, more like the Munich Oktoberfest. We have those beautiful 100-year-old pavilions that are covered and we have the bunting in them. The best compliment that we ever got was this little old German man and his wife came and he said, "I have to tell you, it made me feel like I was at home."
As always, thanks so much for tuning into the show. And that's it for me. Let's get on with the interview.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Conquering Columbus podcast. This is your co-host, Mike, here, and I'm flying solo today. Josh had a bit of an emergency, couldn't come on, but that's okay because we've got a great guest lined up joining us. So today, not only do we have a great guest, but she was able to save us and hop on at the last minute. So we're very excited to have her joining us. But our guest today is Carla Epler. She's the COO of Schmitz Sausage House. And if you haven't heard of Schmitz, it was established in 1886 by J. Fred Schmidt. Schmitz Sausage House has been a staple of German food in Columbus for close to 140 years, and Carla has been working at Schmitz since 1987. She's also the executive director for Columbus's Oktoberfest, which I've been a couple times and I've always enjoyed it. My wife is German, so we got to go. You know, it's the thing. But excited to talk to her about the history of Schmitz, how the restaurant's changed over the years, what she's learned running the restaurant, Oktoberfest, and more. Welcome to Conquering Columbus, Carla.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, excited to have you here. And, you know, Schmitz is one of those things that I think everybody in Columbus kind of knows about. Yeah, German food, Columbus, Schmitz, like they have this like real, obviously built over time connotation.
Yes.
But I'm curious, you know, how universal is that? Like, is like everybody you run into is like, oh yeah, I know Schmitz.
Yes, it's very universal. Although you're surprised at how often somebody's like, what is Schmitz? So we think that everybody knows us, but there's still a few who haven't met us yet. But when you say Schmitz, you usually get the, oh my gosh, I love that place. I haven't been there forever.
Right.
Like, well, you need to go.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah.
My wife actually just got a cream puff from your food truck that stopped by her work.
Okay.
So we'll talk more about the food trucks later. But Carla, I'm curious, you know, one of the first places we like to start is just get a little bit of background on yourself, your story. And we like to go as far back as like, have you always lived in Columbus?
I have not. I grew up in Sidney, Ohio, which is on I-75 right between Dayton and Lima. I landed in Columbus as an Ohio State student. And probably if it were not for Schmitz, I would have either not graduated and I would have starved to death. My financial aid.
One more important than the other.
Yes. My financial aid was completely cut and I was doing a work study tour guide job. And one of the guys that worked with me worked for Schmitz. And he's like, oh, the place I work is probably hiring. And this was in December. So it was around finals time. I came down, I interviewed and they're like, can you start today? No, I have a final tomorrow at 10. Can you be here at 11? I'll get here as fast as I can. All right, have a black skirt, white blouse. and you're hired. I'm like, okay, so that's how I started my career at Schmitz. I was in the banquet department at the restaurant.
Wow. So there's a whole lot to talk about there, I think, because, you know, you've been there ever since.
Yes.
Right? I suppose the first thing I would ask is, what about that initial experience did you enjoy so much? Or maybe you didn't enjoy it and you're just stubborn and you make want to fix things. So yeah. I don't know.
No, I loved it. It's a family owned and operated business. The family works right alongside of you. So right off the bat, I got to meet the Schmitz and interact with them, work alongside of them. It was Christmas time, it was holidays, fun. And honestly, I made enough money that I could pay my tuition with my tips from the Christmas parties. And so kind of the way I financed my education until I graduated was Christmas party tips for winter. We were still in quarters then. Winter quarter, I would use my income tax refund for spring quarter and then work everything I could possibly work during the summer for fall. And the only thing I ever spent money on was my rent, my tuition, and basically toiletries. Mm-hmm. If I ate food, it was Schmitz. They would make sure that if there were leftovers, they went home with me. And back then, we had the old school reservation book, the red book.
Yep.
And so I would open it up and look and see where all the bookings were. And I'd say, okay, well, that'll be my day off. So that's when I will make a doctor's appointment or whatever I need to do. And that's really how I survived Ohio State working full time with Schmitz. And they fed me.
Yeah. And so what I'm curious about, I guess, is a year or two in, or even at the start, right? Like, was there any point ever where you imagined like, oh yeah, this is what I'm going to be doing for the next, you know, 35 years?
No. My major was public relations from the School of Journalism, and I just loved what I was doing. The people that I got to meet, we were always doing fun events, things like that. And when it came time to graduate, they were like, you know, we're looking for a manager. What do you think? And every single day, I use things that I learned in my PR classes, my journalism classes. So one of the guys, he was in News Ed Sequence. He's like, you're a sellout. You're not going to be happy. And I said, oh, I think I'm going to be quite happy. Plus, I was starting out not at great money back then. I mean, I guess back then it was probably okay money. But in today's money, you're like, what? But it was more than what he was going to start out. And I said, I love what I'm doing. I love the people that I'm doing it with. And I'm making more money than you are. So I'm good.
Not a bad gig. Not a bad gig.
Not a bad gig.
I think people underestimate the value of working with people that you just get along with.
Yes.
You know,
absolutely.
Like having a good working relationship with the people you have to spend your time with every day. You spend more time with the people at work than you do with your family.
It's true. I am closer to the Schmitz family, the guys, than my own brother now. Mm-hmm. You know, he lives 75 miles away from me. So that's who you spend your time with. That's who your lifelong relationships are built with. They're the godparents for my kids. Sandy was the matron of honor in my wedding. You know, my kids are working there now. All of them were born in August during the fairs. So it's a generational family business, and it's a generational team member family business.
Yeah. And I think that's a good opportunity to maybe talk about the history of Schmitz, right? Like going back to, you know, how it got started. But I mean, four or five generations, like my family, my mom's side of the family has a family business that's been in the family for a few generations, couple generations, but it's always hard to keep a family business together like that.
It is.
Especially in today's day and age, like kids often don't have interest, especially if the business isn't exciting and, you know, the sexy business to be doing. Talk to me about that history and how they've managed to keep it in the family over that time.
Well, you have to stay relevant. We've kind of evolved since 1886. We started as a meatpacking house, and then we kind of went from that into a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then we had the catering and banquets. We've always had fairs and festivals, at least since 1914 with the Ohio State Fair. That was our first year there. And it was to market the meat products. Mm-hmm. So we've always been involved with that. Then came e-commerce. In 2008, Adam Richman came and filmed Man vs. Food in the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And that was in September he filmed that. And we launched our e-commerce business in December of 2008. So we've been doing that for 15 years. We launched food trucks 11 years ago. So we keep our core values, who we are, the products, the recipes, the people, the culture, but we stay relevant. And, you know, we actually got social media probably 10 years ago. So we come kicking and screaming into the 21st century, but we're getting there.
Yeah. you know, I grew up in that era being a millennial. Like I grew up in the era of social media and I still don't understand TikTok or like some of these new stuff. I can't, I'm lost. I'm having my own daughter here in 8 weeks and I'm just terrified of how I'm going to manage all of that. But social media, all that stuff, like, I mean, I even just thinking about, and it's always been in the same building, right?
Yes. Yes. So that, the building that the restaurant is in was our livery stable. The packing house was across the street where the Schmidhoff condominiums are. And so as you come into the restaurant, the entryway is actually kind of raised and you can see where the wagons used to go in. And Kossuth is very windy, which was the creek bed. And they would drive the hogs kind of down through that creek bed to the slaughterhouse.
Hey, everybody. Mike here. We're going to take a quick break to talk about one of our sponsors, One Columbus. And we are very excited to partner with One Columbus. They really, really share the same vision as us here at the Conquering Columbus podcast, which is really building up the Columbus region to be one of the most prosperous regions in the United States. And One Columbus serves as the business location resource for companies across Central Ohio and around the world as those companies grow, innovate, and compete within the global economy. And they help us lead a regional growth strategy that develops and attracts the world's most competitive companies, grows a highly adaptive workforce, and prepares our communities for the future, inspiring innovation across the board. Their mission really is just ensuring the Columbus region is a vibrant place to build businesses and careers. So again, we really appreciate all of their support. You want to learn more about them, go check out their website, columbusregion.com. That's columbusregion.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be right back into the episode. So I'm curious, you know, talking about since you've been at Schmidt's, what have been the major turning points, the major pivotal moments along the way that, in your mind? What do you remember? What do you think back and think like, this was a big moment?
Well, Man Versus Food was big for us. We always say that launched our national campaign without even trying. And then probably the most pivotal thing in my career at Schmidt's has been COVID, with how we responded to that, how we rose to the occasion, the fact that we have several divisions really helped us kind of stay the course. We didn't really founder at all. Our sausage trucks went off the charts with sales because no one could go to a restaurant. We weren't allowed to open for the first, I think it was 3 weeks that we were closed once everything shut down. So the trucks kind of took off and they've not looked back. In fact, I think some of our seating has been cannibalized by the trucks, but in a good way. I mean, the trucks are doing gangbusters. The restaurant is back, but it really showed the foundation that we have built, the culture of our people. And as a team, we had just started down the path of EOS. And had we not been working through that and laying that foundation, I don't think we would have come out of it nearly as strong as we are. But we really came together as a group. At, you know, we had a meeting and said, okay, here's the cards that we have. And it's kind of, you got a blind deck. You didn't even know what you were dealing with because we weren't sure what the rules were going to be. So each time we would, something would change and we would try to get out in front of it. We told all of our team members, we did not lay anyone off. We did not do any of that. We cleaned out the coolers and the freezers. And in fact, we actually even ordered in extra things. We ordered gallons of milk. We ordered extra eggs, chicken, ground beef, things like that. And we made care packages for all of our team members because we had no idea how long it was going to be before they could come back to work. When we first were allowed to open for carryout, our management team was the core group. And then as we started getting busier and busier, we could start bringing people back quickly. And people who had health insurance, we paid their premiums for them while they were off and had no income. So it really showed who the Schmidt family really is. And, you know, people say they're all about family. And sometimes they say, oh, you should be careful because that means you're not going to get treated well. But our team, I mean, we have people who've been there for 30 years. In addition to my, I'm 36 years there. And if you count the people who have been there for 5 years or more, that's over 400 years of experience.
That's a bit, you
it
know.
Is.
But I think you could tell, right? Like just based on your story, that clearly, right? Like family isn't everything at Schmidt's. If you do a good job, you do good work, you're going to make your way up. I'm curious about the, there's a component in there and now I'm losing my question. Remember we talked about the tornado earlier. For those of you who don't know, we were talking about how my brain works and it's not good. So just deal with that. We were talking about, you'd mentioned COVID, right? So many businesses really found out a lot about who they are, but that diversification of the business was important. So what percentage, I guess, of the business is now towards the restaurant and the food trucks versus the preparation and the e-commerce and that sort of thing?
Well, I would say based on our goals for this year, the restaurant is still 50% of that sales goal. The fairs and festivals is probably about 20% of that. And then our trucks, catering, e-commerce, banquet house at Raymond all make up the rest of it. Now, there is going to be a new twist to that starting January 1st, which will be the Ohio Expo Center and State Fairgrounds. We won the contract for the food and beverage for that.
Nice.
So that's
not a bad contract, I'm sure.
It is not a bad contract. We're very excited about that. So that will change the percentages a little bit, we hope. Mm-hmm. And it really continues that diversification and growth. Part of our mission statement is providing legendary hospitality, helping the community celebrate so that all can thrive. Yeah. And what better way to celebrate than all of the fun things that go on at the Expo Center? And that definitely helps thrive. There's a whole new growth area for staff members. We've got fifth generation of Schmitz. We've got sixth coming up. We have lots of team members that have a tremendous amount of skills that we will be tapping for helping us to run that facility.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense as you kind of continue to grow the business. So I'm curious about, on the website I saw that there were franchise opportunities for the food trucks. Is that fully launched? Are you franchising these, or do you guys own your food trucks now and that's going to happen later? I was just trying to understand that.
Yes to all those questions, okay. Except for fully launched. We have five food trucks. Our fifth one just came online beginning of July, I believe it was. And those are all owned by Schmitz. They primarily are Central Ohio. We go out to some of the surrounding communities, Newark. We'll venture over to Troy, places where we do fairs and festivals that people love us. And when the truck shows up there, they're pretty excited because it's not Strawberry Festival time. It's, you know, July and they're getting their Schmidt fix again. We are trying to launch in Cincinnati with one of our trucks. We have two more chassis that
have arrived. Tough market for German food.
Actually, it's awesome. We do great in Cincinnati. So that's why we identified Cincinnati as the place that we were going to go. And we thought we would start out with a Schmitz-owned and operated food truck. Mm-hmm. We've hit a little snag with warehousing and team. We want to have a local person that is maybe going to be our GM for down there. It's kind of hard to ask somebody to pick up and move from Columbus to Cincinnati, especially if they have a family. So we kind of hit a bump in the road with that, but the plan is still to launch in Cincinnati, probably not this fall like we had hoped, but probably maybe spring of next year. And then once we get that formula really operating well, then pursue the franchising into other cities, kind of looking at a 3-hour radius from Columbus, because we will still have to self-distribute for our products, because you can't just get our Caring Puff filling delivered by, you know, a GFS or a Sysco. We make it. So we need to get it distributed.
And that makes a ton of sense. So I guess I'm curious what the hope is for that. Because some family businesses, right, it's, hey, we're happy with what we got. We just want to maintain that. We want to make sure that we got everybody's happy. We keep the business going. But it sounds like expansion is somewhat on the mind. Maybe not aggressive expansion, but considered growth.
Yeah. And you know what? We have all of those personalities in our fourth and fifth generation family members. Our visionary is a fourth generation. In fact, he's the reason we have food trucks to begin with. He was watching the food truck race or food truck wars way back in the day. And he's like, we need to do this. And so he's been the driving force behind the food trucks. Mm-hmm. If it were he and he alone making all of those decisions, we would have 200 food trucks franchised. But we like to walk before we run. So he always teases. He's like, Carla, I have a list of things that you keep saying no to. And we're not saying no to franchising. We're just saying, let's do controlled growth.
Yeah.
So we're looking to go to cities where we have seen success, or we have, with our mail order, we look at zip codes and who orders the most from us. So that's going to be one of the ways that we help determine where should the next franchise be. And then, of course, logistics fall into that. So, yeah, we have one that is like, well, you know, it's good. Let's not rock the boat. We're good. Let's just stay status quo. But we all know that you can't stay status quo mm-hmm. because then you will become irrelevant and you won't continue to grow that way. So, so we do have a growth plan and we like to say controlled growth. We have some stadiums now that we do the lower.com field with mm-hmm. Columbus Crew. This is our
great stadium, by the way.
I think this is the third summer now that it's been open. So we've got that down to a science. We launched in Nationwide Arena. The middle of December, I think, was our first game for Nationwide down there for the Blue Jackets. And that's going really, really well. We've kind of got that fine-tuned. So now we'll get this OEC thing going mm-hmm. and really make sure we do well with that because we are very protective of our reputation and our integrity. And we don't want to go and do something half-ass for lack of a better word, because, you know, you want to always put your best foot forward.
Yeah. It's like Ron Swanson says, right? Don't half-ass anything, whole-ass one thing.
Right? That's right.
What is the, I mean, I guess we talked a lot about the future there, but is there anything else in the future from an expansion standpoint or growth standpoint? Like what does the next, you know, 5 years look like outside of the food trucks?
Well, getting the Ohio Expo Center really humming along, maybe going into the stadium down in Cincinnati for the Cincinnati FC. We actually have been invited to look at that, but we were like, let's get Cincinnati launched. Mm-hmm. And then it might be a joint thing with that. So, you know, stadiums and things like that is probably next step after we get the Ohio Expo Center and Cincinnati up and running.
Makes a ton of sense. I think that's a good place to kind of start talking about some of the other things you're doing, like Columbus Oktoberfest. So we've talked a lot about Cincinnati today. Cincinnati has a very large German population.
They do.
Huge Oktoberfest. My wife is from Cincinnati, so we're down there. She's German. So you can, everybody, yeah, we're there all the time.
Everybody's German. They got an Oktoberfest in
Cincinnati. One of our relatives has a Rothskeller in the basement, which is not something I would have known about if I hadn't married into a German family, but it's a basement bar, basically.
Yeah.
The Oktoberfest, what's that like? What's that planning process like? What's it like trying to host one in Columbus when there's clearly one in Cincinnati that is a huge pull for a lot of people? I got to imagine that's, you know, getting people to go to both would be a challenge.
You know, it's not. There are Oktoberfest groupies. They just go from Oktoberfest to Oktoberfest to Oktoberfest.
I'm going around and drinking a lot. Like, doesn't, you know, it's not bad.
It's a good time. What's not to like about going to an Oktoberfest? We participate in the Cincinnati Oktoberfest. In fact, we are probably if this is their 47th year anniversary, then it's our 46th year. We started 1 year after they started. And the only reason we didn't start that year is because that's the year that John Schmidt got married. And his wife said, absolutely not. We are not going to go to an Oktoberfest our wedding weekend. So they didn't.
Yeah, fair.
And it's not really a competition to speak of because our Oktoberfest has such a different vibe than the Cincinnati Oktoberfest. You've been to both. Mm-hmm. So they're very different. Cincinnati's is a huge event. It's
ginormous,
but it's very long. It's, to me, it feels more like a street festival that has kind of a German theme to it, where our Oktoberfest definitely gives off that vibe more like the Munich Oktoberfest. We have those beautiful 100-year-old pavilions that are covered and we have the bunting in them. And it just, the best compliment that we ever got was this little old German man and his wife came and he said, I have to tell you, it made me feel like I was at home.
Yeah, that's
and
good.
It just, it makes my heart melt to know that they're enjoying it. I love walking around our Oktoberfest and just kind of eavesdropping on people and hearing what they have to say about it. Because to me, it's like one of my children since we produce it. And we've always been involved with the Columbus Oktoberfest. It started in 1967 in Schiller Park. And it was, at that time, I think it was called German Village Business Association. And they had a really hard time making a go of it because you couldn't sell beer in the park. So there was one empty lot on the corner that Schmidt's, Planks, and Diebels would always have a bidding war over, and somehow George Schmidt always came away with that piece of property that you could sell the beer. Then, so they decided they weren't going to do it anymore. So Schmidt's produced it for several years. They got a little more organized. It wasn't called the Business Association. It was just a German Village Association, I think, at that time. They wanted to take it back, and George said, well, no, we don't want to have two competing Oktoberfest, will just be a huge supporter. So the German Village Society produced it for several years. We were one of the title sponsors for it. I was on the committee for that. They called me the beer Nazi because I wouldn't let people drink for free. No, we're supposed to be making money off of this. You're not here to get drunk. So then they moved me over to the food vendors because they thought I was too mean. I'm still a little bitter about that. And then in 2009, it became a bit of a nomadic Oktoberfest. It changed dates a lot. It got to where you almost had to have a rubric to figure out when it was going to be because they wanted to make sure Ohio State students were back in school. Well, when they originally were still in quarters at that time, school didn't start till the middle of September.
Yep.
Oktoberfest used to always be the weekend after Labor Day when the society produced it. So then they said, well, let's move the date. Then with progress, the venues where they would hold the Oktoberfest became unavailable. So it moved. So it was, where's Waldo and when is it? So they decided that they didn't want to be dependent on weather-related fundraising events anymore, or at least that was the statement. And they came and told us that they were going to cancel Oktoberfest that year. And Jeff and I looked at each other and went, you can't cancel Oktoberfest, selfishly, because Schmitz was a big part of it.
Right.
And that was some good sales for our event team. And we're like, we'll just do it. We used to produce it a long time ago. Now, I was not around the first go round. So who knew that I was signing up for another full-time job? But here I am 15 years later producing it. And like I said, it's one of my children. It's one of my passions. And you talk about when you start planning for it. I sit down Friday evening of Oktoberfest and I start making notes for the following year. In fact, I've already got notes for 2024's Oktoberfest because it's a year-round thing.
Yep.
The time that you put into it definitely cycles up and down depending on how close we are. But for the last 2 days, you know, we closed the fair at 10 p.m. on Sunday night. And yesterday I was working on Oktoberfest and I've been Oktoberfest the last couple days.
Yeah. And when is that this year? Just so people who are listening can be
aware. It's September 8th, 9th, and 10th. We actually are back to the weekend after Labor Day. When we first took it over, we decided it would be the last full weekend of September. That way, the only Oktoberfest that we were competing against was the Dayton Oktoberfest. We would never go against the Cincinnati Oktoberfest for a variety of reasons, but one of them is trying to find, you know, there's not a lot of German bands. So you're all competing for the same entertainers and some of the same food vendors. And Cincinnati is such a huge event for us that it would take too much of our staff away from our Oktoberfest. So it was always that weekend. And then we had to change because Quarter Horse Congress wanted to change their dates and move it up a little bit. And we both used the Ohio Expo Center for our events. And we kind of lost out to them because they're a little bit bigger than us. And so we went back to the weekend after Labor Day. And we always keep it that weekend. We always keep it in the same place so that people will know. So 8th, 9th,
no more Where's Waldo.
No more Where's Waldo.
Fantastic. Well, Carla, it's been great talking to you so far. I think it's a good place to kind of head towards some of our last questions of the show. The first one being, do you have any advice for our listeners out there? Now, our listeners, right, they're generally speaking going to be in the Columbus area anywhere from 20 all the way up to, we've got 70 and 80 out there. So it's a wide range, but they're interested in what's going on in Columbus and, you know, what's happening around town.
Take advantage of looking at the websites, Experience Columbus, because they do a great job of promoting the things that are happening in our community. On our website, you can find our event calendar. You can always find where the truck is through Food Truck Finder tracking app that's on the website. And I just think, just read, be aware of what's going on and take advantage. Columbus has so much to offer that you should never be bored in this city.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely true. And our last question of the show is centered around the theme here on Conquering Columbus, which is live uncomfortably. You know, and usually when I ask this question, I say, without telling you too much about why we chose that, but we chose it because we believe that if you want to stand out, if you want to do something great in Columbus or in anything, right, you got to be a little uncomfortable. So what do you think of when you hear the phrase live uncomfortably? How does it apply to your life and career?
I think living just outside of your comfort zone, if you don't push yourself and do things that give you a little knot in your stomach, then they're not worth doing. You should always have a little excitement, a little apprehension, because it means you care. And you're never going to grow if you just say, oh, no, I don't think I want to do that. I'm good where I am. Then you're just always going to be there. You're never going to move forwards. Great things happen just outside of your comfort zone. So you got to push yourself, and kind of like with this OEC thing, let's go, let's go, let's go. Oh my God, what have we done? But yeah. And then like we've just opened a whole new venue for everyone. That's what we've done. And
exactly. So
sky's the limit when you push yourself.
Well said, Carla. Thanks so much for joining us. It's been great talking with you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Conquerors, thanks so much for tuning in. That was Carla Epler, COO of Schmidt's Sausage House. And if you want to learn more about Schmidt's, you can head over to schmidthouse.com. That's S-C-H-M-I-D-T House, H-A-U-S.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed that interview, you want to hear more just like them, go ahead and hit that subscribe button on whatever podcast app you are listening on. We release one episode a week, so you won't miss another one. Again, appreciate all your support. We'll talk to you next week.